And good day. Welcome to the front page. I'm Chuck Morales. We're talking to Mr. Rick Linio, who is the Assistant Vice President for Facilities Management here at Morehead State, probably one of the biggest, busiest guys on campus with all the building projects, Rick, that are going on here at MSU. And anybody who takes maybe a five-minute walk on campus can see that it is a busy place.
First of all, thanks for having me on, Chuck. I really appreciate it. It's an exciting time to be on campus. Being an alumnus from here, graduating in the sometimes in the 70s, sometime around then.
We won't dig you.
No. It's an exciting time. You know, we're building our new resident hall, which is the first one in quite some time, I think almost 40-plus years. And what's fun about it now is that you can see it coming out of the ground. And then, of course, we're building a new parking garage and the new dining component along with that. So you have those two projects ongoing, and then we have the renovation expansion of ADUC that's going to happen this summer, and it's going to close down ADUC for 22 months.
You mentioned the new residence hall. Let's start with that.
Sure.
It's a pretty impressive facility, even though it's not finished. I've been watching it out the window from here at the station. I get a pretty good view of it, and I've been amazed at how quickly that thing has come up.
Well, normally it seems like a lifetime for us because we've been involved for the last year and a half planning and designing the whole process, and seeing it come out of ground and actually see the structure itself, it is exciting. And they still got a ways to go. It's not something that they're moving every day, working through the weather, snow and rain, of course, and they're making great progress, and we expect it to be open at the end of August.
Pretty big place.
Yeah, you're talking 525 beds. You're looking at almost 200,000 square feet of just, living space. And then you got all the surrounding landscaping that's going around it. But basically, you took all those parking spaces, which were close to 400 spaces. All that asphalt is now going to be all green space with a big building in front of it.
This is a different type of facility. A lot of the dorms here on campus, when they were built, it was with concrete and steel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's actually a very normal construction method that's been used. It's called Western construction, and it's made out of wood. Like, oh my God, it's made out of wood, because all, like you said, all the other resident halls, Wilson Hall, for instance, where I stayed, was just a big block building, and it took forever to tear it down. But all the new trends today to be as flexible as we can with students and with the living conditions that they want, the rooms that they want, this gives us a lot more flexibility. And also from a cost perspective, it was at the price point where we can offer the students the amenities that they're looking for, suite style type of accommodations. But more importantly is where it was very cost effective for us to build. It's very structurally sound. The way they build these things, it's the way it's structured. It's like building out of a block building, but and it's a 25-year building construction as far as life expectancy. But it has all the amenities you can expect of. Each student control their own HVAC system and so on and so forth. So it afforded us the opportunity to be able to offer those amenities to the students. But if you go on UK's campus, you'll see the same type of construction. You go at EKU, that they're building two new resident halls, same type of construction. It's something that's you'll see more of as because it's just more cost effective.
I've also been told that one of the advantages that you can put it together faster.
There's some truth to that, and we have been able to put it together faster. But once you get, it's funny. If you talk to the contractors, once they get the what took the longest was getting the first floor of the B wing. Once they got that put together, is how everything went together as far as the framing and the actual structure itself, and then all the other floors just replicate it, and you can see how much faster it goes up as it goes around to all the different wings. But yeah, it is. It's a quicker construction style, and that's why we get it built within 14 months.
Like you, I was about 4 or 5 years old when I went to college back in the 70s. I can remember those old concrete block dorms where I went to school. But, they were just basically concrete rooms.
Yeah.
They're almost like cell blocks in some way. But these new dormitories, because of the demands of students in the 21st century, they're a lot different. They're almost like apartments, aren't they?
Well, they are. I mean, if you in the new hall, you have we have two styles. We have what we call the suite style, where you have a Jack and Jill bathroom. You have the restroom and the shower, and then two rooms on the opposite sides each of that, which each hold two students. And then on the what we call the A wing, which is the wing closest to the rec center, those are more of your apartment style, which are four single bedrooms with a kind of a living area, and they all have their own closets, and there's two restrooms, vanities, and everything else for the students. So it's a little bit different, but yeah, they're just like apartments.
When did you start this project? It's been, I guess, fall?
The planning process we've been planning for the last year and a half, but it actually started construction in June of last year.
Okay. So what's the timeline on completion?
Well, it's about 15 months, and it gets us right to about the end of August. So that is the projected date, and that's what the contractor is pushing for, and that's what we're pushing him, because obviously school starts middle of August. But we're going to be housing students at Cartmel Hall. And then those students will transfer right over to the new hall once it's open.
Up until the last several days, you've had a relatively nice spring to work in. It's been pretty dry, so you've gotten a lot of work done. But obviously, you've got some setbacks with the rain, so a lot of this stuff is weather dependent. But at the same time, the place is under roof, so I guess you can still get a lot of work done.
And that's the nice thing. Once you're under roof, it's all interior work. It's getting the sheetrock up, drying everything out, getting all the utility lines in there. I mean, you're talking about 4 or 5 miles worth of utility lines in that building. And getting all that in place and tying everything in. A lot more work can get done once it's on the roof, which fortunately we are.
Simultaneously, not far away from the new residence hall, you've got a parking garage structure going up. It will have, I believe, 400 parking places, mm-hmm. along with a new dining hall attached to it. How are things going?
Well, the parking garage is just about, actually, that opens, our plan opening is around August 1st. Right now, they're doing, the structure itself is up. The second and third levels, which were what we call precast structures, are in place. And what they're doing now is all the finish work, pouring the first floor decking as far as concrete, and then getting all that done. And August 1st is when it's going to be open. Now, as far as the dining commons component, that work is starting now, and that won't be finished until October. But also, we're going to be getting the interior work of the new dining commons in October as well, and that's going to take another 7 to 8 months, and we hope to have the dining commons component up and ready by next spring. So there's a lot more work that still has to be done, but the parking garage itself would be up and ready to go by August.
People would think that when you're talking about a parking garage, you're putting up a shell, you're putting down pavement, maybe some posts to support it. It's a pretty simple place to put together, probably pretty cheap to put together, but they would be wrong, wouldn't they?
Yeah, nothing's cheap in today's economy. I mean, the building alone, just the parking garage alone, is almost $14 million total project cost. And it's just all the infrastructure has to go in place to build a structure like that. And that's what people don't really realize, that all the concrete work, we must have poured, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of yards of concrete, it seems like. We had concrete trucks go by every day. And then you have all this, what we call precast steel or precast concrete structures go up, which really is the parking garage. It's like a big, back in the day, again, I'll probably date myself, back in the days when we had the erector sets where you just plug and play, and that's what the parking garage is. It's really just a series of pieces that just fit together, and it just goes right up. And that's how most of your parking garages are today, and how they're built.
It's interesting to watch the process, and that thing went pretty quick after you got the foundation dug out and you started to put the concrete and the posts in and things of that nature. But you mentioned with the actual dining hall, and it's going to be an upscale dining hall that will be attached from what I've heard. That's a little bit more complicated.
It is, because it's actually sits on top of a parking deck. So if you see there, if you go by there now, you see these concrete columns. There's a deck that goes on top of that. And then And then the actual, that is the flooring, so to speak, for the dining commons. So it sits above the parking deck. So you have parking underneath there. And, of course, you have an elevator and everything else that takes you upstairs and your stairwells. But, yeah, it's going to sit over 600 folks. So it's bigger than we currently have on campus. And then they have, Aramark's putting in what they call their fresh food concept, where you'll have different stations where students can go and choose and pick what they want. So it's going to be really a very nice venue for
I think my
students.
Mom would hate that, because if it was on the table, that's what you ate.
Well, kids have, they'll have a choice. And that's the style now. That's the trend that you'll see in Loudoun College campuses, that the food service companies are going for that, to get the variety of the menu.
So what's the timeline for the
We actually start, you'll start seeing the what we call the facade go up now. That's all part of this phase one. Phase two is the actual interior work, the actual finishing the work, putting all the kitchen equipment in, putting all the finishes in, the tile and everything else, getting all that work done, the ceilings. And that takes that'll take about 8 months to get done. And I'll start probably late October.
And I think I've heard the projected opening date is fall 2017.
I think it'll be close to the spring, just to be get everything ready and stuff. That's what we're projecting. If it opens early, great. But we're looking right now at spring.
I've been looking forward to the expansion and continued renovation of the Adrian Dorn University Center. And that's a project that's like $49 million, and I've heard that's going to be pretty neat.
Actually, it is pretty neat. First of all, we're closing the building down for 22 months, beginning the end of this month, and we're relocating all the services there. Student life services are moving over to the recent purchase Board of Education building, and CART services and conference event services, along with post office, are moving to Allie Young. So all those businesses are going to be relocated. But the bookstore will be operating out of there. So the bookstore will be operating out of there for the next 22 months in that same location, because that's the only space we're not touching as part of the renovation and expansion. But we're adding about 80,000 square feet. Totally different type of food concept we're putting in there. We're expanding our meeting room capacity for our students and faculty. We're expanding the food options. We're putting a lot more retail operations in there. You'll have places like Moe's and Steak and Shake, and of course Chick-fil-A and Starbucks.
In.
I know. and Witch, which is a sandwich place, and then Aramark will have their brands as well. So it's more of your retail operations there, but tremendous opportunities for the students. Gathering spaces. We have a 24-hour technology lab for them, as well as part of this whole expansion component, and what we like to call the sports pub, which is actually a sports pub minus the alcohol. Hopefully, it'll be there one day. But it'll have all the amenities as you would think if you went to a Wild Wings or Buffalo Wild Wings, things of that nature. A lot of TVs, a good opportunity for students to gather, sit around, watch TV, watch big games. Also, in evenings, there'll be some place where they can study, but they'll have a lot of opportunity for them to be able to meet, gather, eat, and then you have all the student life functions back in there. You'll have a new auditorium for about 150 seats that will be used by the student programming group. Also be used by the services welcome department, where new students, prospective students come in. That's where their tours, and they'll have the ability to, state of Moorhead, what's happening at Moorhead State University, what's happening in the city of Moorhead and the region. So it's a good opportunity where new prospective students and parents will come, and that will be the starting point when they do their tours for campus.
About 30 seconds left, Rick. When do you want to start this and when do you want to finish it?
Starts this actually start construction mid-June, and we expect to be done April of 2018.
Again, that's Mr. Rick Linio, who is the Assistant Vice President for Facilities Management here at Moorhead State. I'm Chuck Meraz. This is Front Page. Back with more after this.
There are many ways to connect with Morehead State Public Radio. Log on to WMKY.org for enhanced regional news, on-demand audio and video, breaking news from NPR, and information on your favorite programs. Get links to Facebook and Twitter while you listen to our live broadcast online, or download mobile apps from NPR and take 90.3 FM with you everywhere. Connect with your community and Morehead State Public Radio. Visit WMKY.org.
Back on the front page, I'm Chuck Morales. We'll talk some sports right now. In case you hadn't noticed, Greenup County High School's baseball team went into Thursday's scheduled game against Lawrence County with a sparkling 29-0 record. We spoke to Musketeers head coach Greg Logan.
Greg, undefeated at this point in the season. Did you have any ideas that this could possibly happen with this team?
No. We had no idea that we'd be sitting here 29-0 and, you know, breaking a lot of records and being a lot of position in the polls and stuff. We had no idea of that. We knew we had a pretty good ball club, and we knew that the boys had a lot of talent and a lot of gifts that you don't see. But, you know, we knew that we thought we had a pretty good chance of being a good ball club again, but nothing anything like this here. It's just, you know, I think right now there's only two other teams in the Kentucky state high school history that has ever had a winning streak like this. So it's something that you don't plan on. It's something that you hope for, and it sounds good and all the above, but it's just, it's exceeded our, you know, what we would have ever imagined.
Well, as you look at things, I mean, is it one of those situations where, I know hitting is contagious and winning sort of begets winning. Is it just kind of one of those things you just sort of got on a roll and stayed on it?
Well, I think it's a combination. You know, we've had in 29 ball games, we've had all kinds of strange things that's happened. So, you know, some innings we've come out and we've scored 10 the first inning. And sometimes, you know, we found ourselves down one night, 7-0 in the first inning. And after we beat the team, you know, Spring Valley, West Virginia, 18-0, and we think, okay, this is going to be easy. And then we're down 7-0, and it's a whole different ball game. So, and then, you know, we found ourselves at, you know, in Florida, you know, playing against the PRPs, the West Jesmond, you know, it's a total different ball game. It's a lot of zeros going up. And, you know, then like I say, in 29 ball games, you just have all kinds of different shapes and sizes. But in the end, when it's all said and done, when it's over, we've came out on top. So, We've had big cushions. We've had, you know, like the Beechwoods and stuff. The boys have just played phenomenal baseball. And Cincinnati teams, you know, they've played good baseball. So we've had to pitch. We've had to throw it. We've created some of our own messes, which we've done quite often. But the good thing about this club is they've never blamed each other. We've dropped fly balls. We've missed all kinds of elementary stuff. You know, we've messed that up too. But they've never blamed one person, and they just keep fighting to the end. And they know if they're up in the seventh inning, two outs, that we've got a chance. And you know, some games that we've took to the sixth, we've took to the seventh, being behind. And we think if we've got a bat in our hand, those kids are. They think that they've got a chance. So that's the good thing about it. It's not the fifth inning, you know, we haven't scored and we're not down. And, you know, they don't get down on each other. So it's a great chemistry that this is my 10th year, and I've never seen a chemistry like it. So it's just something that every coach dreams for.
And the thing is, I've looked at your schedule. It's not like you're playing Little Sisters of the Poor game in and game out. You've played some pretty good competition.
Yeah, that's and we have in the past, we've always tried to play, you know, the very best competition, even in our tournament, you know, that we hosted. We had two teams from West Virginia, two teams from Ohio, two teams from Kentucky, and we feel like that those were, you know, we had Camel Midland, Nitro from West Virginia, and Jackson and Wheelersburg from Ohio, and us and Beechwood from Kentucky. So we felt like that those were the six best ball clubs right up there in the three states. And, you know, I think we won every game by mercy on those. So it's the competition that Greenup County plays, the end results will, I think that has a lot to do with the end results that we have sometimes and that we expect is the competition that you play. And we're not one that there's no person out there that knows high school baseball can ever say that Greenup County shied away from stiff competition. And I think in the end, I know in the end that it will better prepare us for our journey there.
Yeah, I've seen the run totals you've put up, so obviously you guys can hit the baseball.
Well, we've phenomenal this year. The turnaround, I mean, the home runs. I mean, my sophomore's leading the team in home runs, you know. I think he may be on five or six right now, Gage Hughes. And we've had, I think, seven players to hit home runs this year. So we went for years and couldn't buy home runs, you know. But this year I think we've had seven guys that's had some home runs. And you know, I think that's a testament to what they've done in the summer and in the fall and in the winter of lifting weights and being prepared for this. So it's, you know, we got a lot of players hitting 400, maybe four or five hitting into 400s, and, you know, probably the rest of the starting lineups in the 300s. So it's the competition that we've played. Everybody right now, everybody's throwing their number one. I don't think nobody is trying to throw their four or five at us, and so everybody that we face and we see is throwing their number one. And if you know, tonight we play Lawrence County, so their goal is, I guarantee you, if I was the opposing team of Greenup County, hey, let's stop their streak. Let's beat the number one team in the state of Kentucky. Let's put their first loss on them, and that's the way that we've been, you know, approaching this thing for the whole season. And but the boys have just, you know, they've answered the bell just about every time out for 29 games. They've answered it.
Well, what about people talk about pressure in a sense, Greg, when you get a streak like this going, as it builds, there's more and more pressure. Are you seeing any of that?
Well, the coaches are, for sure. the coaches, the fans, you know, the parents, I know that they're seeing, you know, that they're feeling more of the pressure than the kids are. And that's okay, you know, as long as the coaches and parents see that and feel that, and it don't dwindle down to the kids, because those are the ones that's out there that obviously is going to win it, lose it, or whatever. So the kids, I don't think, and they know that. I mean, they know with so much social media and Twitter and Instagram and all that, you know, that they see exactly where they're at. They probably see it before that anybody else does, but they do not, it does not seem to, you don't hear them talking about it a whole lot. You never hear them mention, come on, we're down, we got to keep the streak going. So they've handled it much, much better than probably the coaches. I think sometimes they put too much pressure on us as coaches and parents, but it doesn't seem to even, you know, bother them a bit. And they know, you know, they know what's on stake and they know what's up. So it's just something that they don't get caught up in a lot. And that's a great thing there.
Is there, I guess, I remember a few years ago when the New England Patriots went through the entire regular season in the NFL without losing a game, and they got all the way to the Super Bowl and wound up losing that, and it's almost like, oh, this whole thing was for nothing. Of course, you had Kentucky's basketball team that went undefeated until it lost to Wisconsin here last year in the Final Four. So is anything short of a 16th region title, if you don't win it and you've done all this, is that a failure?
Well, I'm not going to say it's a failure. It's probably a mission that we set out to do that we – that may not be accomplished, but you know, we're not even going to think about failed missions or whatever. But there's no failure, I can promise you, in going 29-0 or 36-0. And you know, this thing can happen. You can go 36-0. I mean, right now we can go 29-7 and finish out the season. And if you don't get out of the first game of districts mission, you know, we have underachieved, and I'm not going to say that the boys have failed, but, you know, we've, or the coaches underachieved, I guess, maybe would be better. But, you know, it's, these kids, I can promise you, and I can promise anybody that's out there, If they do not walk away with a district title, a regional title, and a state title, they will feel like that they did not fulfill the mission that they set forth this year, last year, and you know, all the above. So there's no failed, you know, there's no failed opportunities out there or anything, so we can't look at it like that. I'm not even going to put it on the kids like that.
That's Greenup County baseball coach Greg Logan on the front page. I'm Chuck Mraz. We'll see you next time.